me manquais, tu me manquais aussi.
And I loved wildlife, and so I grew up hating livestock because of the damage they were doing. And then my university education as an ecologist reinforced my beliefs. Well, I have news for you. We were once just as certain that the world was flat. We were wrong then, and we are wrong again.
Hello everyone, my name is Jemima Harms and you're listening to John Abbott on the Air. The clip you just heard at the beginning here is the beginning of a TED talk by the ecologist Alan Savory, the inventor of a system called holistic planned grazing. Over the last couple of weeks, I went on a bit of a journey to find out more about the system and what it could mean for the good of our planet. I interviewed those in the field and I learned a lot, and I'm very excited to share it with you guys. However, this is such an expansive topic that it would likely take hours to explain. So this documentary will simply be an introduction to the topic. All I hope to achieve is to make you curious. All right, let's get into it.
So I'm Drew Ewing, or Andrew. I recently graduated from Clemson University with a master's in biosystems engineering.
I'm Joel. I'm a student at McGill currently, and I study bioresource engineering.
When Drew, Joel, and me sat down for a Zoom interview, there came one moment in our discussion where Drew suddenly gave a perfect explanation and metaphor to explain holistic planned grazing. It was one of those things where the moment I heard it, I knew I had to include it in this documentary. I also happen to think it's an excellent introduction to the topic, so here you guys go.
Who aren't aware of holistic grazing or planned grazing, a lot of it is really using mimicry of kind of the design that's already in place. So the classic example is cattle typically on grass. So the closest thing I can associate with is like the bison grazing Great Plains. Now, yeah. I mean, if you look at context, there was millions and millions in that bison herd, and they move with the times and the seasons, right? But they were also in a tight herd. They weren't all just sparsely kind of all around. Yeah. Because they had things such as bears. There were bears here in Kansas before the frontiersmen, wolves. And then we still have mountain lions and cougars, you know, sporadically today. Basically, they were chasing these bison or these herds because there's antelope and I'm sure quite a bit more. Basically, they were kept in tight herds, which means that they would eat down densely. Think of it this way. God created a lawnmower. And so, you know, the lawnmower doesn't stay at the same spot and keep spinning. What it does is it mows it. But because it also is a lawnmower that happens to have fertilizer on the back end, so think of pee, right, urea and manure, urine, and that also has this microbiology, it fouls the ground. You don't want to eat where you poop, right? You're not going to eat your dinner at a toilet. And so the same mentality is applied, right? They're being chased by predators, and they look at the ground in front of them and go, well, this isn't worth it, but I see a bite ahead. And so they move. And so they're moving in a dense pack herd. And so, but it's really using that design to your advantage. And so like numbers that I've kind of consistently seen is, you know, I've seen a range typically over time, not right away, because you can't overgraze if you keep them on the same ground. So rest is a key part of this. You got to let the plant have time to rest, recover, regrow, and then, you know, come back and mow it again, right? You don't mow every single day, you know, you don't come back and mow every single day. You let the plant grow for a little bit of time and then come back and mow. And so, you know, rest is a big part of this, but you start understanding that timing, you start to understand the uses, and that's holistic planned grazing. So how do we look at our system and how do we use that lawnmower, so to say, to basically plan out our grazing schedule for the maximal benefit for the land?
What this really exemplifies is the difference between normal grazing methods, overgrazing, and holistic planned grazing. Where usual grazing methods only fulfill one aim, which is to feed the livestock, Holistic plant grazing fulfills too. Additionally to the feeding of livestock, it also regenerates the soil through eating all of the old plants evenly off, leaving the ground enough time to properly regrow, and through the even spread of the already mentioned feces. And you may think that all grazing methods do that, don't they? I mean, all animals have to poop what they eat back out, right? And all the grass gets eaten one way or another. Yes, but no. See, the normal grazing technique is usually to simply fence off one piece of land and let your livestock roam around that for the season or even year. That means that they have quite a bit of choice on where they spend most of their time. And if you have ever seen a pasture, you would probably have noticed that the most manure is always under the trees and near the water troughs. It is not spread evenly across the whole field. What that does is only return the nutrients to a small area of the field, while the rest gets none at all. In those other areas, the ground has to keep giving up nutrients and water and energy, and doesn't get anything in return. Furthermore, when the ground does manage to grow new plants from the reserves it still had, it takes them about 3 days to even do that. The cattle can simply walk over and eat it again before the plant can complete its growth and new nutrients can be reinserted into the soil. That's why rest periods are so important in holistic plant grazing. I'm gonna let Drew explain that a little more in detail.
This comes from a farmer, Walt Davis, who wrote a book called How to Not Go Broke Ranching. A key part of this is the rest and recovery for the plant. So let's assume a plant gets bitten. Now, what's from his example is, you know, typically the plant's going to try to regrow within about 3 days. And so if you basically don't get the animal off, if it's, you know, some plants are like ice cream to a cow, let's say, right? Well, if you and I are getting a choice between ice cream and broccoli, we're probably going to choose ice cream, whether or not, you know, that's necessarily the best for us. And so the cow is going to go back and eat that new growth of that ice cream plant, of the good tasting plant to it. And so, you know, when that happens, the plant has to use so much energy from the roots basically to do its regrowth. And so when it does that and then doesn't harvest any energy, but gets bitten again, that's just that much more energy from the roots that you lost. Typically, like what he recommends is about every 3 days. I think I've seen something like that around, but you know, you basically do just, you got to get the animal off there before the regrowth occurs. Otherwise, you're kind of undermining any work that the plant's going to do, because it needs a ROI from a business or financial sense. It needs a return on investment for its growth that it took out money from the savings bank, right? Took out money from the roots. And now if it invested that in a business and the business goes boom, bankrupt, that's just that much more money lost.
That's what holistic plant grazing does differently. The animals are kept tight packed and rotated every or every other day, which is not to be confused with another technique called rotational grazing, which is similar but with some key differences, as Joel explained during our interview.
Many people have heard about rotation in grazing, and also I guess that's what people have been doing since always, rotating. Even when you think of a shepherd or something wandering around, they also don't go to the same piece of land multiple times, like right after one another. But I think the key difference here is what Drew also said, like you try to keep the animals tight together. Like any given day, you don't give them a huge amount of space because you want all of that to be eaten up in one day, and then you usually move it after one day already. Whereas in traditional, like rotational grazing, you would maybe leave them like for 2 weeks or something on the same piece of land, or sometimes even a month. It's better than no rotation, but it's already start some kind of degradation because the land is getting overused and the grass starts dying a bit. So you can have to stay less than 3 days. That's when it's like holistically more appropriate, and then give it a proper rest period, like Drew said to you.
Now, at this point, you might be wondering, why should you care? I mean, most of you are probably not currently grazing any livestock, or maybe never even planning to, so why is this at all important to your lives? Well, To answer that question, I interviewed someone who consistently works with the people most affected by overgrazing and desertification, something that holistic planned grazing could and also aims to remedy. I'll let him introduce himself.
My name is Ernest Habanabakize. I'm from Rwanda. I've done my master's at McGill in the Water Resource Management Department. Before coming here, I've worked with Oxfam International on several aspects of smallholder women farmers in agriculture and women economic empowerment. And currently, I'm working at McGill on a project with UNFRO that actually deals with climate change adaptation with smallholder farmers in Senegal.
Through his work, Ernest has quite a bit of experience with smallholder farms and their problems. And truly, the problems that desertification is causing is extensive.
One of the biggest problems they face in the recent years is actually drought problem. So, you know, these farmers depend on getting the harvest to put them to market. But then they also depend on the rain, which they don't get to see. And so now, the question is, so why do we see season changing? Why don't we have the rain again? And that's when we see there is things like desertification now comes into our mind. Because, again, I would say it's not homogeneous. It depends on which areas we're talking about. Some areas are much affected than others. Because at least I've been in East Africa and West Africa. East Africa is not that much affected than the West, because the West is Saharan countries. They are already close to the deserts. And you would really see like the whole rangeland, like there's no tree. It's just dry, like it's a dry land, you know. Not only what I've seen with my eyes, but also testimonies from the farmers, because they don't have that land they do have. It's already gone, or it's dry, or it's not useful anymore. When talk about some other farmers, so we're talking about the household, because at the end of the day, so we're talking about the food, the harvest that goes back to the household. So the entire family actually suffer from the consequences. It's very scary when you think about it, and it's kind of an urgent situation that calls for interventions from everybody. Because like you said, we're talking about almost actually more than half of the population depending on agriculture. So which means the livelihoods that depends on that sector are at risk.
This is the answer to the so what question. Because holistic plant grazing could seriously help these people and improve their lives. So even if you personally aren't affected yet, it is knowledge that has to be shared with more people, because it changes how we look at livestock in general. It changes how we view our impact on the earth and shifts our perspective on how environmental problems could be fixed. So, how would holistic plant grazing help against desertification? Well, in order to explain that, let me first explain what causes desertification. Desertification is a process in which a piece of land slowly starts to turn into a desert, as the name suggests. This is not, despite what one might believe, because of a lack of rain in the region. A lot of desertified regions actually have a real flooding problem during the rainy seasons. So if that's not the issue, what is then? It is actually a rather complex topic, but one of the most important problems is that most of the soil is, for one reason or another, uncovered, meaning that there is little to nothing between the soil and the sun. This means that as soon as the sun comes back and starts to heat up the soil again after rainfall, there is nothing stopping the water from simply evaporating back up. And this is exactly what this grazing method can help with. I'll let Alan Savory, if you remember him from the beginning of this documentary, explain the rest.
Take 1 square meter of soil and make it bare, like this is down here, and I promise you, you will find it much colder at dawn and much hotter at midday than that same piece of ground if it's just covered with litter, plant litter. You have changed the microclimate. Now, by the time you are doing that and increasing greatly the percentage of bare ground on more than half the world's land, you are changing macroclimate. This picture is a typical seasonal grassland. It has just come through 4 months of rain, and it's now going into 8 months of dry season. And watch the change as it goes into this long dry season. Now, all of that grass you see above ground has to decay biologically before the next growing season. And if it doesn't, the grassland and the soil begin to die. Now, if it does not decay biologically, it shifts to oxidation, which is a very slow process, and this smothers and kills grasses, leading to a shift to woody vegetation and bare soil releasing carbon. To prevent that, we have traditionally used fire. But fire also leaves the soil bare, releasing carbon. And worse than that, burning 1 hectare of grassland gives off more and more damaging pollutants than 6,000 cars. And we are burning in Africa every single year more than 1 billion hectares of grasslands, and almost nobody is talking about it. We justify the burning as scientists because it does remove the dead material and it allows the plants to grow. Now, looking at this grassland of ours that has gone dry, what could we do to keep that healthy? And bear in mind, I'm talking of most of the world's land now. Okay? We cannot reduce animal numbers to rest it more without causing desertification and climate change. We cannot burn it without causing desertification and climate change. What are we going to do? There is only one option. I repeat to you, only one option left to climatologists and scientists, and that is to do the unthinkable and to use livestock, bunched and moving, as a proxy for former herds and predators and mimic nature. There is no other alternative left to mankind. So let's do that. So on this bit of grassland, we'll do it, but just in the foreground. We'll impact it very heavily with cattle to mimic nature, and we've done so, and look at that. All of that grass is now covering the soil as dung, urine, and litter or mulch, as every one of the gardeners amongst you would understand, and that soil is ready to absorb and hold the rain, to store carbon, and to break down methane. And we did that without using fire to damage the soil, and the plants are free to grow. When I first realized that we had no option as scientists but to use much vilified livestock to address climate change and desertification, okay, I was faced with a real dilemma. How were we to do it? We'd had 10,000 years of extremely knowledgeable pastoralists bunching and moving their animals, but they had created the great man-made deserts of the world. Then we'd had 100 years of modern range science, and that had accelerated desertification, as we first discovered in Africa and then confirmed in the United States, and as you see in this picture of land managed by the federal government. Clearly more was needed than bunching and moving the animals. And humans, over thousands of years, had never been able to deal with nature's complexity. But we biologists and ecologists had never tackled anything as complex as this. So rather than reinvent the wheel, I began studying other professions to see if anybody had. And I found there were planning techniques that I could take and adapt to our biological need. And from those, I developed what we call holistic management and planned grazing, a planning process. And that does address all of nature's complexity and our social, environmental, economic complexity.
In other words, by eating and trampling the grass and spreading feces over the ground, the holistic plant grazing method ensures that the ground stays covered and keeps the water from evaporating. Through this, the ground is able to hold water for a longer amount of time and help plants survive, which in turn helps against desertification. Which, I think is actually a good place to end this. So, I hope that you guys enjoyed this documentary and that you learned something along the way as well. I especially hope that from now on, livestock will not be equated with overgrazing and destroying the environment in your mind, but as a viable and sustainable possibility that, if managed right, can save our planet and easily feed all of our population. Finally, I want to thank Joel Harms, Drew Ewing, and Ernest Habanabakize for taking the time to do interviews with me. I really appreciated it. And that's it. All the best from your host, Jemima Harms, from John Abbott on the Air. Bye, guys.
Okay, I guess one last thing I want to say is what you should try to do just as a takeaway is to try fight problems with more life instead of with less life, and just using it more intelligently, because that's what life is all about.
I think what you should do is when you look at how the nuances and approaches, I think you should study the design and observe it, and then see what are the nuances that work, what's the truth, what's the truth in this situation, and see how I can conform to it and potentially use that to benefit. But I think also something like the Lord's been teaching me the last few years is, you know, it's not about 100% efficiency, which is so different than, I guess, the way that I was thinking. Just, I don't know, the way I think of it is like whenever they were harvesting the fields in the Old Testament, like they were told, hey, like, don't harvest the very, like, the corners of your field. If you miss it, don't go back for it. And so part of it is kind of what Joel started hinting at, like, you also got to give back more than you take out.
We've got to actually make sure that farmers are true stakeholders. They've got to be part of the conversation. You know, we've seen people coming from different countries with all type of concepts, but then it takes actually time for the farmers to understand what it is. But when you start from the bottom up, when you make sure that the farmers can see the problem themselves, we've seen that when they understand the problem, they have solutions themselves. They have them. So I would actually suggest that all stakeholders, all people who are involved in the climate change adaptation planning, smallholder farmers support program, make sure they are stakeholders in the process of understanding the problems and developing the solutions.
This is Will Duhame for John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM. And if there's one thing you'd think an 18-year-old guy would have, is a good story to tell. After 18 years of living on this planet, you'd think, hey, that guy must have something good in his head to tell everybody, a good story. But let me tell you something, guys. I've got no good stories. Not one, like, completely interesting thing that's like a real attention grabber to tell people. If I'm doing like a story time type thing, I've got nothing. I've got one story though, and this is how I'm going to start it off. So if there's one thing I'm going to get out of the way before I say the story, is that I'm not a good golfer. I never have been. I hope to God one day I am a good golfer, but the way things are going right now, it's not looking good. So one day, I'm golfing, probably for Father's Day, with my dad, my granddad, and my little brother. I was probably around, let's say, 13 at the time, just started high school, and my little brother at that point would have been 8. So we go golfing. The day starts off great. We go early in the morning. It's around 7 in the morning. We're there. We're teeing off. We get it to like the third hole. Third hole comes along. My dad's driving the golf cart, and my dad's a maniac behind the wheel. Doesn't matter if it's a golf cart. Doesn't matter if it's a car or anything. It's insane. So we get behind the wheel. I notice the grass is a little damp, right? And my dad goes, hey, you see how the grass is damp? I'm like, yeah. He's like, this is what happens in the morning. The grass is damp from whatever happens. And I'm like, okay, cool. I don't know why you're telling me this. He's like, you want to know what's something cool with the tires on the golf cart and wet grass? I'm like, what? We go down this hill. He grabs me around from my chest, spins the wheel, and does a 360 in the golf cart or down the hill. My mind and my heart, I had a heart attack in that exact moment. My mind exploded. I was in complete shock. I didn't know what was going on. My dad, on the other hand, is laughing his ass off because I'm terrified. I don't know what to do. I'm a 13-year-old kid who just did a 360 in a golf cart. That doesn't happen to many people, but for some reason, it happened to me. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is my one good story.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. This is John Abbott on the air. I'm Evie Stockvis. See you next time. Gone to find her.
Well, this one called the volcano eruption. Well, you see, 84 crowd of people. You know, man, have become new. It name, nobody move, nobody get hurt. Nobody move, nobody get hurt. The youth them just a dress up in a white collar shirt. And some of them wear it till it resemble dirt. He said, he want me to join the army. I ain't gonna do it, officer. No way, I ain't gonna do it. Turn out your left pocket. I'm searching for a comb automatic. I'm searching if you have any ratchet. He said, what is your number? I didn't answer. What is your number? I still don't answer. What is your number, boy? I really don't answer. In crank up in chopper. Me mama, then me started to answer. Guess what I say? 64, 46, BMW. What you want? 64, 46, BMW. Lord, he said, give it to me one time. Give it to me two times. Give it to me three times. Lord, it name. Nobody move, nobody get hurt. Nobody move, nobody get hurt. Not the donyam cattle, not the donyam dirt. He come from the planet of Earth. He come from the planet of Earth. Say granny in a kitchen, I cook rice and chicken. The dread out a door, I cook a soup. No trouble granny, granny never trouble you. Not